Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The legends are true.
Overwhelming power.
The sauce of destiny.
Yes. The most legendary sauce has arrived as McDonald's transforms into the anime world of WicDonald's. The greatest flavors unite in all new savory chili McDonald's sauce to make your 10-piece Wick Nuggets, fries, and Sprite ultra-powerful. Unlock manga comics with every meal and sit down for a new anime short every week only at WicDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, go!
And participate in McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.
Beyond the Fairway podcast, Dougie Smith alongside Will Lowry. Will, it's good to see you, man. How's life?
Man, it's good, man. I just went to the grocery store and I am ready for this Super Bowl weekend, bro.
Man, that's a great point. I like how you said that because guess what? We got a Super Bowl champ about to come up in here with us, Marcus Allen, joining us going Beyond the Fairway. Oh, you surprised? Are you surprised?
I think I'm more surprised because it's another Allen. We had Allen, Allen, yeah. Allen, and another Allen. So
that's,
I guess we're on the bees next.
We're going all in with the Allens and the Allens. Yeah, that's right. A good point. I didn't even think about it like that. So Ray Allen, Tisha Allen, and then Marcus Allen coming in here Beyond the Fairway podcast. Right. But look, I hope you got all your snacks, all your goodies getting ready for this Super Bowl, because I tell you what, Patrick Reed wishes he could be sitting somewhere. Although he got a big check and a trophy, there's still an asterisk, or is there, to his win this week at the Farmers Insurance Open.
I really don't think he did anything wrong. I mean, he's getting a lot of controversy about it. He didn't do anything no different than any other player, you know?
Let's play it back. Play it back.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So he hits the ball out of the bunker, his second shot out of the bunker, fairway bunker. It went left. Mm-hmm. Now, in real time, he did not see the ball bounce. We can't be mad at him. He did his due diligence. He asked probing questions to the volunteer. Volunteer later said, "I did not see it bounce." So He did everything that any other person would do, you or I would do in that situation. He called over rule official to have everybody look and see if this ball was embedded. It wasn't, or it was rather. So he got his relief. I'm not sure why everybody was in an uproar. Yes, there was a bit of a gray area, but I think that's when it comes down to more reputation and perception when it comes to,
man, here's the thing, Will. This guy picked the ball up.
He
then relocated the ball. And then while the ball had been relocated, then called the rules official in to check to see if there were any cratering. Now, a normal player under the same circumstances would have left the ball in its hole, in the pitch mark, wherever it had broken the surface. The ball should have been there when the rules official. Now, I'm not saying what he did was incorrect, but I'm saying how he did it definitely raised my eyebrow, because it looked like there was some shadiness, and it's like, I don't want you to see this yet. And then there was about 20 seconds where he's actually prodding the ground. Could he have been pushing it the ground down? I'm not saying he did, but
that's the intent. So we can't, and that's where it comes in with the reputation and perception, because we can't assume this dude was just cheating. We can't assume that he was getting a little active with his fingers. We can't assume that. That's not fair. That's not fair for us to assume, man. But I just don't think we should chastise this guy for that, man. He did everything right. How are you gonna do everything right and then realize
he didn't do everything right. The ball should have been in the mark. He should have left the ball where it was so that the rules official could have had an accurate account of the situation at hand. Now, did he do everything right? Okay, yes. He told his playing partners, "Hey, I think this might be embedded." Did he ask the lady? And that's one of the things that I think viewers have to understand. You can't go back to the replay in golf. You have to check with your playing partners. You officiate the group, and you have to always remember to protect the field. In this case, at the end of the day, regardless what I believe about Patrick Reed, the field was protected because he won by five. So even if you call a double on whatever had happened, he wins by three. Either scenario, Will, he wins.
Well, that goes to my point, Doug. If he did everything proper in the beginning, I mean, even ask the volunteer the right questions, I think it's unfair for us to assume that he had ill intent when he moved that ball. That's all I'm trying to say.
That's fair. But let me say this. I don't think anybody traversed Torrey Pines as well. Granted, he won. But nobody traversed Torrey Pines as well as Patrick Reed. Hell of a short game. Hell of a ball striker. Played mostly out of the fairway the entire championship. Congratulations to the guy. I don't hate Patrick Reed's ability to be a golfer. I enjoy how he plays, and I admire his short game and his putting. But what I don't like a lot is some of his attitude and how he carries himself as it relates to these instances, because this isn't the first time. This is like the third or fourth instance where Patrick Reed has had some questionable things going on with the rules.
I get it. Maybe some of his competitive nature gets in the way. I get it. I still believe that everybody can turn over a new leaf.
I am excited right now because for the third guest, we have another Allen coming in here. So, hey, let's get right to it. Marcus Allen, Will and I go beyond the fairway.
Kansas City Red.
Special guest today, Super Bowl edition, Mr. Marcus Allen. Welcome in, my good friend.
My pleasure, guys. Good to be here.
You know, we do see you in that rocking chair. I was telling you before we came on, I said, if anybody's earned the right to sit back and let it rock, it's you.
Wait, have you been inside my house before? Because there's no rocking chairs in here, man. What are you talking about?
He don't want anybody to know that he's getting older. He still looks young and smooth. So, yeah.
You know, I live by how old would you be if nobody told you how old you were? So, I'm young.
I believe it. I mean, shoot,
I'm
black don't crack.
They say black the key to crack. Long life is don't act your age.
Right. That's and the thing about and thing about it is, Doug, you know, at the Diamond Resort, I always enamored at Marcus because he always has a smooth swagger talk to him. You know, he's the only guy that looks handsome when he hits the ball out of bounds. I'm like, man, that's the way.
That didn't happen very often, though. Come on.
Not this year. This year, I was thoroughly impressed, man.
I was waiting for that. Okay.
Yeah, I was. I didn't really want to tell you too much, but the fact that you were you started to know your golf swing, I was like, oh, this is a different Marcus right now. So yeah. All right. Kudos to you, brother. Kudos to you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. We've been obviously playing side by side. I played with each other for a long time and stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing how long it takes for you to sort of own your own swing, right? Or understand the golf swing.
Exactly.
And have it, you know, fit for you and not anybody else. So it takes time. It's weird. What a weird thing.
What talk me about that swing, because I know, you know, you're originally from California, and you had a swing coach, Brady, I can't remember his last name.
Brady Riggs, man.
Brady Riggs, yeah. Uh-huh. So when you moved to Atlanta, did you still keep him as a swing coach, or are you kind of doing more things on your own?
No, I haven't gone back. You know, it's interesting. It's like playing football. I was so, because I started when I was 10 years old, I was so fundamentally sound. I never thought about fundamentals and stuff like that. And, you know, the biggest challenges for most people is when you're with the golf coach, you know, you do everything correctly, but as soon as you leave the golf coach,
it goes haywire.
and then mentally, if you don't hit the ball well, you know, then right away you revert back to, why didn't I hit the ball well? And you forget about it, all the things that you were working on in the process. So that's that happens quite a bit. So I have to get mentally focused, man, focused on golf and really pay attention to details, which I'm not a sort of a, you know, I'm one of those a messy desk gets assigned a genius kind of person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Details has never been my sort of deal unless I, you know, obviously I knew all the details of football. So that was a little bit different.
Right.
So Marcus, I know you've had some physical limitations or impingements, you know, given your years in the league. Yeah. How did that kind of translate into your golf game? Are you still kind of fight some pains, or how does that work for your game?
Well, I don't have any pain. Obviously, I think when it gets cold, that's, you know, when it drops a little, the temperature drops below a certain number, I'm you know, that's not good for me because I get stiff. You know, the only really thing, you know, I broke my left wrist, my right arm doesn't straighten out. And my neck is, you know, it's you know, after maybe, I don't know how many, I'm just taking a guess, maybe a million car accidents, you want to call it, or collisions. Your neck gets a little stiff. So that's when, obviously, you know, you have to make sure you turn fully on every swing. And sometimes you don't because you get lazy. Those are the things that sort of, you know, I guess caused my game to not to be at the level that I'd like it to be at and it should be at. So,
well, how is that getting coached around? Because I know with any time of physical limitations, you know, coaches will kind of tailor their attitude. So you talk about your coach that you did have. How did you guys work around the lift and the arm and not straightening, you know, with the golf? Because that's the first thing you taught, right, Will? Like, well, I don't know if we can talk to Will about any swing-related topics because he holds the club backwards and upside down. But
yeah,
how
he's an outlier,
did,
man. He's a,
yeah, yeah. It's a swing only mother can love.
Hey, but that's a fact. It's yours. And that's absolutely what I said. Most important thing is to own your swing, man. Do what's right for you and stuff. And there's so many people, I think, that grow up and start watching particular swings and try to emulate those swings that really don't fit their body. So it's all about what works for you. And sometimes we are obviously, you know, we get enamored or we get over-focused on, you know, how things look as opposed to, you know, the number on the scorecard. You know, as they say, obviously you can make a four and you can hit it off the off a tree and it can ricochet off the stick. But if you still make four, nobody right. cares.
How long have you been playing golf now, Marcus?
Golly, I think I started my, late 20s, maybe.
Late 20s? Was that early 80s ish? Late 80s. Okay. All right. What was that like? What was coming up in the game at that time versus now? Is there a big change as far as being a black man in golf and in your stature?
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, I'm a sort of, you know, history, you know, my dad taught me a lot about, I guess, historic figures, black historic figures that, you know, that sort of did well and transcended the environment around them and stuff. And so I was always made aware of all these great athletes, like in baseball, you know, with Jackie Robinson, and who I knew a great deal about, and golf, obviously, heard Charlie Sifford. And so, I mean, I sort of came from a world that, you know, these guys, even though they had all these, you know, these hurdles in front of them, they cleared them and let nothing stop them. You know what I mean? Obviously, they didn't, you know, break the, you know, didn't door entirely down, but they certainly made and paved the way for, you know, for guys. You know, I know Leo did very well and stuff, and obviously, you know, the first to play at Augusta. I mean, all those things are very important. So as I look at those things, I've always said all those guys, and they didn't have to play my sport, but all those guys were like a part of the fabric of my success. And I guess we, you know, there's a couple of common denominators that I look at and stuff. And one, those guys had to be courageous, right? And they had to be skilled in order to do what they did. But courage and intellect or the qualities that, you know, I really admired. Muhammad Ali, obviously, was my number one athlete. And he was the guy, that is the only guy I've ever got an autograph for me. Yes, Muhammad.
What was it about Muhammad Ali that was so polarizing?
Polarizing?
Polarizing, captivating. What was it about him?
I thought he was brilliant. And again, I thought he was courageous. And he may not have been book learned, but he was brilliant. He was so intelligent. He was so streetwise. And you know, as we grow as men, and it doesn't really matter what color you are and stuff like that, it is doing the right thing instead of the popular thing, right? Mm. And he always did the right thing. It wasn't certainly popular at the time. And as a result, he, I think today is, you know, even though he's not here, is probably one of, you know, the most respected athletes ever that have walked the planet, because he took a stand and he did it with conviction. And he, Muhammad Ali, I mean, I can't say enough. I used to, you know, we couldn't afford to go watch the Rumble in the Jungle, closed circuit television, right? But I remember listening to it on the radio. I mean, seriously, man, I was fighting, you know, vicariously through him. Every punch he threw, I threw, you know, and I think I was laying on the ropes too, taking punches from George Foreman as well. I mean, that's how much I loved Muhammad Ali. And one of the things that I you know, there's certain things you like to keep to yourself, but I did this, I saw him in Beverly Hills once. He had about maybe four or five people there eating at, I think it was Spago's on Rodeo Boulevard. And he had done so much for me. And I ended up just picking up his check. He wasn't even probably aware of it. I just, you know, I just picked it up and left. But he was awesome. He was my favorite, man. So,
love that, man.
Yeah. So he was, I mean, because he had given me so much and he didn't, you know, and I you know, met him several times and stuff, but he's given me so much that he's not even aware of, you know. He's not even, he wasn't aware of at the time that he did so much for me that inspired me so much as a young athlete and stuff. And then accomplishing despite everything that was in front of him, taking on the government. Despite, yeah. And see, so, and that's, this is why, and I, you know, when I talk to young people, I go like, what? Oppressor? I mean, come on, guys. I mean, compared to who? Muhammad Ali? He took on the government and yes. won. Don't tell me about you can't do certain things, right? Don't tell me about there's small obstacles in front of you. And I'm going like, hey, wait a second. I've seen too many great people like him, you know, succeed despite all these, you know, obstacles, despite all these, you know, these walls that were thrown up in front of him. So, you know, the world I come from is you let nothing, absolutely nothing, absolutely positively, indubitably nothing stand in your way. Nothing. I don't care what it is, who it is. I mean, it's no excuse because we've had people like Muhammad Ali, like Jackie Robinson, you know, they were successful despite all the things and they made it. So that's the world I come from.
Now, you talk about some of the struggles they had to endure, you know, those societal things. We're talking about you coming into golf. Did you have to jump any necessary hurdles? Were there things in your way to either prevent you from learning, or was it kind of like, you know, I'm at Sherwood Country Club. Let me just go ahead and walk through the gate. You know, how was your entree into golf?
No, I didn't have any obstacles whatsoever, guys.
Right.
And I know it's different if you're considered a celebrity and stuff like that, you know, than the average person and stuff, but I didn't have any opposition at all when I started playing golf and played the, you know, Riviera Country Club, all these different places, and never had any issue whatsoever. So again, you know, I know that doesn't happen every single day, and I know I'm not you know, sort of the only guy that that has had it that way.
Talk to me about, you know, when you say you just started playing the game, not having opposition. I want to know who brought you to the game. Who was the person that introduced you, and what was the shot the momentous shot that brought you back?
God, I can't exactly remember how we got started, but, you know, when I started to play, I mean, I actually thought that was better when I first started playing. And I don't know if I explained to you that, Will. It's like, because I was just a natural athlete, right?
Yeah.
And I played, you know, it was bottom up golf naturally. Made your weight shift and the ball, you know, you just drop, you know, it just drops in the slot from that point. But then I started thinking about swing plane and all this other stuff, and oh my gosh, then you start getting paralyzed and you forget all your athleticism. I mean, that's the if there's a problem in teaching. That, I think there it is. I mean, first of all, never lose your athleticism, right? Never lose what you know naturally to do. And the getting lost in everything that happens, I mean, your focus behind you instead of what's in front of you is I think the art to teaching. Never lose your athleticism. Of course, you have to be fundamentally sound, but not to the point where it paralyzes you from doing or being who you naturally are and what you're capable of doing. So
see, that's how you know you got coordination, Will. Like, that's how you know you coordinated, when you can just pick it up. Like, let me go ahead and this club right here. Let me go ahead and grab that.
Well, you know, I played baseball, so naturally, you know, everything was sort of, you know, you lead with your lower body, and you know, and the bat drops, and then you try to obviously take it deep. That's how I naturally played that way. So. It was easy. And then I started getting lessons and like, oh man, that was the worst mistake.
Did you have teammates that you played with, Marcus? Did you have like teammates back on that Raiders team that, that you'd go out and play with on an off day?
I think Mike Haynes, we played. There was a few guys that would go. There was a course over in El Segundo that we would go play. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a big course or anything like that. And it was a range as well that we used to go hit balls and stuff like that. I mean,
it wasn't Chester Washington, was it?
No, it wasn't Chester Washington. I didn't play Chester Washington until, golly.
Before the Crips got there.
Maybe like 7 years ago or something like that. You know what I mean? So.
I think you the day we all went out to Chester, Washington, because you came out with it was like you and Marshall Faulk and
Ken Bentley brought us out there.
Ken brought you out, and shout out to Ken Bentley and the APGA.
Yeah,
and that's, I think,
absolutely.
It's funny
yeah.
that event is the same tournament where I met Will.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we all go back to 2011.
Yeah, that first tee box is very special to
us. It was what, 9 years ago? No, 10 years ago?
Oh, 10 years ago,
10 years ago.
I said like seven. I didn't. That's how quickly things go by. You're right. But Ken Bentley had us all out there. Obviously, he used to work with Nestle, and Ken was always trying to give young men an opportunity to you know, to realize their dream in the world of golf and stuff. And so my hat's off to him for that.
And it's working. It's definitely in fruition as we speak right now.
He's such a good dude, man. He's such a good dude.
He is. So I kind of want to move forward. It's no secret. It is Super Bowl week.
Yes.
And it's Tuesday, right? So I would like to know the Tuesday before the big game. I know you mentioned preparation. You mentioned getting mentally prepared. Where were you right now at this time on a Tuesday in Tampa umpteen years ago? What were you
1983,
doing?
1983, Will. 1983.
I don't know if we flew in on Tuesday or Monday. Maybe we flew in on a Monday. I'm not quite sure. I can't remember exactly. I do know on Wednesday we had curfew, but we had sort of the day off, I think. And I do remember we had seven guys miss curfew.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And No, Will. We were actually kind of pleased by that, because that meant we were obviously in our right frame of mind, because obviously if the Raiders weren't, you know, they didn't have any transgressions, then we felt like something was wrong.
Right.
so seven was a good number.
That was like if everybody showed up on time, it's going like, oh my.
Oh yeah, God, superstition wrong, kicking man. In.
Are these guys nervous or something? No, these guys were. Nothing changed. They were the normal selves. And I remember the first night we went to a club called Confetti's. And I remember Dexter Manley kind of sizing me up, you know. It's like, and I kind of gave him the, you know, the De Niro, like, you talking to me? You talking to me? So, and it's just, it's interesting, man. When you look back, I think that was like they only had like one club in Tampa at the time, and that was the club. But I remember just, you know, staying at the hotel, brought my whole family in. They were staying certainly at a different hotel and stuff, but just going up and down the service elevator because it was so crowded in our lobby, trying to hide, at the same time practicing well, feeling good about myself. Trying to avoid people in the lobby as I go back and forth from upstairs to downstairs into my room, and then really having the greatest night's sleep of all time, then going to the stadium. I don't know if you guys have heard the story about the rental car and everything. So
yeah,
and then just playing a great game, and then really sort of that whole game was really no big deal, though. There was nothing. Well, I fumbled the ball. I think maybe the second carry that I had. And I remember it just kind of rolled away slowly. And I can even see, as I said before, the name Roselle on it as it kind of like, you know, rolled away slow motion. And my fullback, Frank Hawkins, jumped on it. And I just walked back to the huddle like it was no big deal. It's like, whatever.
So, Doug, that explains right there when he hits it out of bounds why he's so calm, cool, and collected.
Whatever.
Right there.
Fumbling the Super Bowl and like, all right, whatever.
You know what? I'm like great quarterbacks, man. If you throw an interception, you gotta have a short memory. If you're a DB, need to get beat, you gotta have a short memory. If you lay the ball on the ground, you gotta have a short memory. You cannot allow yourself to obviously think anything negative. You can't be overtaken by the moment. And I was trying to explain to somebody that, you know, they said, why'd you play so well in that game? And I said, frankly, I played in a lot of Super Bowls when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
In Pop Warner football. I mean, it was the biggest game at the biggest moment. And, you know, whether I was either making a play on defense or running the ball. I mean, I always had those moments with the ball in my hand. And then, you know, from Pop Warner, you go to high school. Then I won the CIF championship. I scored 5 touchdowns. I've always had, it was a Super Bowl for us, you know what I mean? And then in college, sort of the same thing, in having played in some great games in college football with the ball in my hand. So to me, those were like Super Bowl moments. So there was nothing that I was awed by going into that game, because I had been there several times before as a young man, as early as 10 years old and on up, then through high school and through college and now as a professional. There was nothing. I was so comfortable when everybody else was scared and nervous. So that's really sort of a, you know, it was a blessing to sort of experience all that and to be able to have success. More importantly, to have success in those moments. So you have something that you can, you know, sort of fall back on.
Now, who were those folks for you back then and coming up that you called your mentors? And I ask you that because, you know, we want to touch on your relationship with Danielle Kang and how you've you know, helped her ascend to some of the greatest heights on the LPGA Tour. But I'm interested to hear kind of who was that person or people that you leaned on?
Well, I got to tell you what, you know, I had the privilege of us obviously meeting Jim Brown when I was in college. The Juice was a mentor at the time. I had a lot of people that were around me that cared. First of all, it all starts at home. I mean, I'm going to say that first, right, before I even get to any other athlete. I didn't have to go further than the dining room table for my role models. They were there. My dad was like the oldest of 11 kids, and his dad died when he was young, and he didn't have a great relationship with him. But as a young man, he said, if I ever have kids, he's going to have a great relationship with his kids. And so, I mean, as a, I don't know if my father was like maybe, I don't know, 9 or 11 or something like that. I mean, those words he lived out. I mean, he became the greatest, and he still is the greatest dad and the most supportive and toughest. Oh, no, he didn't let us get away with anything, though. And, you know, he was from Texas. So everybody thinks I'm a city slicker, right? I'm from San Diego. Well, my dad is from Texas and my mother's from New Orleans, guys. So I got Texas and Louisiana blood running through me strong. So, but I didn't have to, I just had great parents. And then I had great grandparents and uncles and stuff that were always supportive. I had that village. And then I, you know, was able to go, I mentioned Jim Brown, which is interesting and stuff. We were, me, Ronnie Lott, and Dennis Smith, while in college, we would go to Jim Brown's house and we would play basketball against him. And Jim is awesome. I mean, he's one of my guys, right? But Jim, if you started beating Jim, he started to get more physical.
Oh, yeah, he's going to bring it.
Hey, and at that Jim time, Jim Brown, I don't know if you think at that time in the early 80s, Jim was still chiseled, dude. Mm-hmm. So we would back down and we would basically say, we're going to let Jim win, man, because we don't want to get into the altercations with Jim.
it's so funny about Jim Brown, man. He's such a competitor. And I can only imagine what it was like back in the day. Because I know played, Jim Brown was my partner in a four ball. And but when I tell you how competitive he was, I almost couldn't say anything in a four ball if it wasn't pertaining to the shot at hand. He was like, everybody need to focus. You come over here, Will. You're up now. Hit now. Be quiet. And you tell everybody in the whole group to be quiet. So I've learned a lot of respect from Jim Brown, for sure.
And let me tell you what, he's the best, man. He's been a fountain full of knowledge, man, and I admire him. Again, another guy who did the right thing and not the popular thing, trying to obviously advance all athletes doing their careers and trying to, you know, as far as economic development and stuff in the communities and stuff. Jim was just way ahead of the game, and American, you know, dealing with the gangs and stuff like that. So, you know, I have people like that around me. And as it relates to Danielle, I met her through Eric Dickerson. And really, honestly, there was really nothing that I could add to Danielle's, you know, as far as her game or anything like that. She was as sharp and as polished as an amateur as she gets, as you can get. She won two amateur titles back to back. The thing that I think I, you know, certainly give her is, you know, somebody to talk to. I think, you know, her dad passed, which was extremely big in her life, you know. And so as somebody that, you know, she can always talk to, you know, I just try to be there for any aspect of her life. But the other part is just trying to get her to, you know, I mentioned short memories and things like that. If you hit a bad shot, you got to forget about it. You can't dwell on it, you know.
And I mean, she's so fiery. Does she get any of that smoothness from you, though, Marcus? Like, she's a pistol, man.
Wait a second,
I love watching Danielle Kang play golf. Like, I enjoy it.
Let me tell you something. She was like a truck driver when we play. She's the fire. You know, the words aren't there now, but the fire still burns bright, which I like. Again, it's almost like your daughter out there or your niece out there playing and stuff. And I certainly want the best for her. She's such a wonderful person. She's growing. And so many, you know, different levels. She's maturing and she's really starting to want to give back more. You know what I mean? And that's when you understand that, hey, you're rich by what you give and you're poor by what you keep. And she understands that now and stuff. And she's going to use her platform to play, you know, golf at the highest level, but to also help people along the way. And that's what I'm most proud of.
So how did you feel? And I kind of want a more personal reaction. How did you feel when she won her first LBJ Tour event back to KPNG?
Did you hear I almost cried, man? I was so
I'm hoping you cry right now. I'm trying to get there.
I called her and I was almost in tears, man, when she won her first, her major. It was like, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm almost crying here because, you know, I know how hard you work. I know how important it is to you. Obviously, all the people that made it possible for you. And I knew that she was, you know, that this meant a lot to her and stuff. So, but I just, you know, when you see young people work so hard and you see their dreams come, you know, to reality and it just makes you feel good. And so I'm extremely happy for her and stuff. And I'm her number one fan. I know her mother. I argue with her mother. I said, no, I'm more supportive than you are. I'm her number one fan, which of course I'm not, but you know.
Oh, man. So. Marcus, man, thank you so much coming in here. We're going to get you out of here shortly. But I got to ask, all the accolades, all the things you've done, you've won a Heisman Trophy, couple Super Bowls, Pro Bowls, MVP of the Super Bowl. When you look at the mantle, what's the one thing that really makes you smile?
Well, I think just the Hall of Fame itself. When you look at the sheer number of players that have played the game, and then obviously to be selected out of all, I mean, the masses. You know, we're talking about millions of kids that started to play this game. Basically, says it all. Obviously, you know, to win the Heisman Trophy, to win the Rookie of the Year, to win the Super Bowl MVP, to win the league MVP, to win the Comeback Player of the Year. I mean, all those things are great. But I got to tell you something. it pales in comparison to being a father.
Mm.
It does. I have a 7-year-old. It's the best thing in the world. And I say to myself, right, every day, he did not ask to come, right? I owe him everything that I can do for him. Mm-hmm. Hey, you guys ever see the movie Sidney Poitier, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? To me, it was one of the greatest movies of all time. It's still one of the greatest movies of all time. From this standpoint, right, it was a father-son relationship. And his dad obviously is not happy about the relationship that he's in. He says, son, you don't know what you're doing. And he says, you know, you've been nothing but a source of pride for me and your mom, sort of paraphrasing, your whole life, right? And now you're just going to throw it all away? And Sidney says, shut up. And he says, you can't tell me to shut up, not after what I've been to you. I've carried that bag 75,000 miles to give you all the chances.
Hmm.
And then Sidney says, listen here, if you carry that bag 1,000,000 miles, you did what you're supposed to do because you brought me into this world. And from that day, you owed me everything you can do for me, like I will owe my son if I have another.
Right.
And then he said something, another thing that was sort of really interesting. He says, Dad, I love you. You're my father and I'm your son. And he says, you see yourself as a black man or as a colored man. I see myself as a man. And I thought that was deep as well. Right. And I know it's always sort of, I love who I am. I love being black, right? Mm-hmm. I don't walk around doing this, right? But I love who I am because I see myself as a man first. And I think sometimes it sort of narrows who we are if we see ourselves as just a person of color. No, I see myself as a man and I'm black and I love it. Which widens everything I want to do in life. I can do anything I want to, go anywhere I want to. I'm not gonna let anybody tell me that. I'm not gonna narrow who I am and stuff. And so, but fatherhood, I think, is the best thing in the world. And I can impact my son and give him everything that my dad gave me. And that's what I want to do. So the trophies are nice. They get rusty and old, but children are the greatest thing in the world, so.
Well, as a new father, I appreciate you saying that. I got a 7-month-old, so I'm almost misty-eyed, Will, over here. I'm in my feelings right now.
I'm
about to get my Drake on over here. He got real light-skinned and emotional.
Right.
Marcus, I got to ask you, Super Bowl's right around the corner. Last time it was played in Tampa, you were there. Who is going to come away with the trophy, the hardware, the rings? I want to know, what's your call? What's your pick?
Is this a rhetorical question?
It probably is.
You know I'm going for the Chiefs, man.
I knew it was the red team.
Absolutely.
That's why you wore red, Will.
Exactly.
And the shoes back there. I see them.
The organization is one of the best there is. And it's just great to see the players, obviously, that are on the field. I mean, they have so much talent, and I just think they're poised to win their second championship. I think that the quarterback is just absolutely amazing. He may, some could argue, I think Joe Montana was just phenomenal, but obviously the argument that Tom can be the greatest of all time because he's, what is this, 10th Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, 10th.
This young man, Patrick Mahomes, could rival Tom, could overtake Tom. If he certainly has the luck that Tom has and he has the teams that Tom has, because
he's healthy.
Absolutely. And if he stays healthy, absolutely. He's a blessing to watch. I mean, it's just like the arm angles that he throws from. But more important than that, to me, it's like he's fearless, dude. He is fearless, man. He's like a gunslinger. So that's what I love about him.
So does he remind you of anybody back in your day when you were coming up? I mean, any similarities?
Well, I mean, just certainly not movement or anything like that, but Dan Marino was a gunslinger, man. He just, he threw guys open. He was great. So he's one of my guys too. Hey, Will, before we go, are we getting ready to leave now before we close? Listen, I just want to tell you something. Listen here. you and I, we've talked for, you know, a while about you doing something like this, and my hat's off to you. I mean,
oh, thank you.
That you worked at it, you put the effort in, and you, I mean, I always said, you got the contacts, man. You can call up anybody. Your phone book, it should be, you know, contacts would be awesome, man. You know so many people and stuff, but listen here, there's a lot of people talk about doing something, but you know what? A few people follow through, and you did, and I'm happy for you, man. And I'm great to be on your show. It means a lot to see, you know, to me, to see you, your dream come to fruition as well. So it's, I just want to say congratulations, bro. Really,
thank you, man. I almost bring a little tear a little bit. Thank you so much, man. I got
no more tear jerkers, guys. Come on.
I know, man. You done got me. Yeah, me and Will Marcus. You should have done the interviews, man. I'm over man. Here. Got me thinking about my son and misty eyed.
But Marcus, man, it's so crazy, man. What, you know, when you talk about teammates and personnel, I was thinking, man, who could I have partner with me on this project? And one of the best, he's on his way to be one of the best broadcasters you have ever. I think you kind of get a sense of his skill set right now.
Let me tell you something. You talk about smooth.
He's smooth, man. So
checking it all out. I didn't want to say too much, man. But let me tell you the. He's smooth, man.
He's good. He's good.
Transitions really nicely into
transitions. Yes, he can hit it out of bounds on a 5-2 over at Chester Washington. You won't even know it. So
I'm gonna break the club.
Pick it up and hit it on the green and still make the eagle.
There you go.
Hey, Marcus, look, this was such a blessing for you to come on here. Thank you so much for your time. I will say this. I was wondering, I'm glad we got into the story about your pops and your mom, because that's the Creole in there, because you're probably the only person that I want to take skincare hygiene tips
right,
from.
Right, exactly.
Because I might have to go shave, man. Like, I'm inspired to get clean cut.
Woo! Right, right.
Hey, you know, I think one of the keys to guys is, it's interesting. I've been, I guess they call it intermittent dieting. I've been doing that well before it came out.
Came out, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't stuff myself. I mean, I do exercise and stuff, but I don't overeat. You know, another guy who is Willie Gault, man. Have you guys seen Willie Gault lately?
Willie Gault, like, he's 29
years old. I mean, he doesn't age, and he's the same weight that he was when he played.
Yeah,
I need some tips.
It's all you
need to write a book. That's gonna be his book.
Yeah,
you know,
I mention sugar, I mean, he has the willpower of I mean, you mentioned sugar, I'm all over it, man. I can never say
hey,
that.
Hey, Will, Black Don't Crack by Marcus Allen.
Black Don't Crack by Marcus Allen, right, right. And I still wear pink, so like.
Hey, Marcus, thank you so much for going beyond the fairway. We appreciate it. You always are welcome back. We want to come back, have you back on after the Super Bowl so we can talk about the game. And, you know, let's all get together at some point in the COVID-free world and play a little G, the game we love. But I'm signing off, and I'll see y'all on them links. Holla. Man, that dude tried to make me cry, man. I told him in the episode I was getting my Drake on, man. That dude gonna bring up the kids and his greatest accomplishment being a father, man. He had me right there, Will. I got emotional a little bit.
I had a little froggy in my voice, man. It was that moment of silence, like, all right, man, we all about to cry, man. We about to have a bro moment for sure.
Yeah, you was trying to produce him and get him in tears, and y'all got me. It backfired. Man, you know, so great having Marcus Allen come on, especially Super Bowl week. Look, this guy, man, like, I really enjoy hearing the fact that, you know, he looked to Muhammad Ali and Jim Brown as some of the folks, you know, that really kind of he wanted to be like when he grew up. And I think, you know, knowing the stories, you know, that was well before, you know, our era, Will. But, right. But you hear the stories and you can feel the passion that the guy has for like a Muhammad Ali. And, you know, Muhammad Ali from Kentucky. So, you know, I enjoy that and have heard all the stories.
Yeah, you can't box, though. You don't you dare say that. But you got no hands. But yeah, I fully agree, man. Like, you know, one thing that really kind of I really took from it was the fact that, you know, thinking about, you know, the Marcus, man, how did you have the Black experience, man? You know, I was coming up, you know, during in the 80s in golf. Yeah. And I didn't realize when he got into golf, he was Marcus Allen.
Marcus damn Allen already. He kind of skirted.
Yeah,
all the,
yeah,
all the,
yeah. He went right over his head. So that was something amazing for me. But after the cry moment, I just realized, like, man, he's Marcus Allen. So,
but isn't that polarizing? The fact that an everyday working individual in that era could go to a golf course and experience discrimination and experience like the worst things that could happen just because of the color of somebody's skin, but when you're an athlete or an entertainer, you kind of hurdle over all of that BS that can come from the societal stresses. And I really found that to be quite unique, especially in that era. Like, he just rolled up into country clubs playing golf. Like, I would love that existence.
And that's the thing about it. It kind of goes back to the first Allen interview we had. You know, they're expected to be just an athlete, you know. But I guarantee you, at that time, if Marcus would have said his political opinion, may have been a different story.
Yeah, but he did tout Muhammad Ali for staying his. But you know what's crazy? You know, mother from Louisiana, father from Texas, grew up in San Diego. You know, there's another happening this week. They're in San Diego at the Farmers Insurance that I think a lot of people might have heard about, but they might have also missed. Kamayu Johnson gets exemption into the Farmers Insurance Open from CEO Jeff Daly, gets on property, tests positive for COVID. Willie Mack, who's a Farmers ambassador like Johnson, then gets the nod to play in his first PGA Tour event. Doesn't get that call till 10:30 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Kudos,
and he's got two golf courses he's got to get ready for.
Yeah.
So just a lot there to unpack. First of all, congratulations to Kamayu for earning that exemption. Our apologies that you had to face this you know, bulls crap dealing with COVID. But now you're going to get to play in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. You're also going to get to play in the Honda. So we look forward to seeing your debut.
And praise to her mom. We got to keep his mom in prayers, too, because I know he tweeted that his mom was heading to the hospital. So you definitely not prayers on that aspect as well.
Absolutely. But then you got to switch gears to go from this horrible, horrific event with Kamayu testing positive to this jubilation you have for Willie Mack getting his start. But now it's, wow. Like, how can you get the call, Will, at 10:30 that you're going to play in your first PGA Tour event on a Tuesday? You can't really get on the golf course late until Wednesday to play a practice round. My hat's off to the guy. He hit four fairways, shot five over, six over, and I think he played well. Like, played really good golf.
And he sniffed under par. Like, you know, very first ever PGA Tour.
He was like,
he touched it, but he quick said, I don't know. But he touched it. But the fact is, like you said, all the stuff you just mentioned. And he was already, I mean, when you're at your first PGA Tour event, there's somewhat of a level of that you're against the eight ball already. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, he had all these stipulations that he had to meet, you know, in a short time frame. He was against the eight ball, man. Kudos to him, man. I think he has respect amongst the PGA Tour players, and that you and I know that's where he belongs. And I'm glad the PGA Tour players think the same.
Big shout out to Willie Mack. We're going to see him here in a couple 3 weeks here at the Genesis Invitational, getting the exemption there from Tiger Woods himself. So Willie will tee it up again. So very excited to see what he does. But Will, before all of that, the greatest show on grass returns to the biggest stars. Head back to Phoenix, here where I am, for the Waste Management Open. Coverage begins Thursday on Golf Channel, and don't miss the premiere of NBC Sports Edge Betcast. I don't know if you know much about that, but it's a whole new way to watch golf. Get bettors' views and insights and analysis, plus live odds powered by PointsBet. Get inside the action at peacocktv.com/golf. Hey, a lot going on, man. Greatest show on grass. It's going to be a little different this year. Not as many drunk folks running around 16th hole. But, hey, I won't be on property. I think it's a super spreader event, just saying.
Right.
I'm going to keep my butt at home watching Golf Channel on NBC Sports, and that's where I'm going to be for this week. Any picks, Will?
As far as Super Bowl, man, I'm going with the red team.
Red team. Okay.
I didn't like Brady. But now I think I'm going for Brady. I'm a Brady guy now. So I'm picking Tampa 24-17 in Tampa victory.
I'm not going to give no scores, but I'm going with Mahomes all day. Let's go Chiefs. That's all I'm saying. And since we're talking about picks, I'm going Finau to break through this week at the Waste Management Open. Finau.
Do you know his history?
I know his history. You know what? If there's anybody that's due, it's Tony Finau.
It is. He won't be due on Sunday, but it is.
Hey, let me tell you something. After he wins and I get my points bets in, He's coming on here, and we're going to talk about what he's been through to get his dub at the Waste Management. So thank you so much, guys, tuning in. Doug Smith, Will Lowry, always in a hoodie and a skull cap, just saying. Beyond the Fairway, appreciate y'all. Love you.
Man, don't talk about my hairline covers.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The legends are true.
But overwhelming power.
The sauce of destiny.
Yes. The most legendary sauce has arrived as McDonald's transforms into the anime world of WicDonald's. The greatest flavors unite in all new savory chili McDonald's sauce to make your 10-piece WicNuggets, fries, and Sprite ultra-powerful. Unlock manga comics with every meal and sit down for a new anime short every week only at WicDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, go!
And participate in McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.